The news media in the United States is a reflection of what society is interested in, the depth of its interest and the extent of its interest at any given time and on any given subject. At times, one may get the impression that the media constitute a homogeneous entity, collectively obsessed with a single event, such as the current congressional hearings on the Iran-Contra affair. I would not be at all surprised if you had that impression. However, this is a misconception. The news media is made up of thousands of independent, privately owned radio stations, television stations, and newspapers. And they're all turning out the same product, news. However, the product comes in many different models. Some news media are conservative in their approach to news reporting. Some are liberal. Others are non-ideological. And others concentrate on financial news, some on national news, others on local news. Now, some regard themselves as the watchdog of government and the exposer of corruption in high places, as you have witnessed so fortuitously in your time here. Others concern themselves with the news, only the news and nothing but the news. And if some members of the media are content to merely report the news, others, through investigative reporting, are determined to make the news. Nevertheless, taken collectively, the members of the news media play a very important role, not only in reflecting society's interests, but in influencing and shaping those interests. To give you an overview of this very complex and dynamic institution, we're very privileged to have with us today Mr. Barry Zorthian. Now, Mr. Zorthian is currently a partner in the Washington, D.C. public affairs consulting firm of O'Kade Henderson O'Bannon. He is a retired vice president of Time Incorporated and a former senior officer in the Foreign Service. He has a very extensive background in government, journalism, and communications, and has served in a wide variety of assignments, both in the United States and overseas. He's a graduate of Yale University and the New York University School of Law, a member of the New York Bar, a retired U.S. Marine Reserve Colonel, and former program manager of Voice of America. He was chief United States spokesman in Vietnam for 4 years and then spent 12 years with Time Incorporated, first as president of Time Life Broadcast and then as vice president for government affairs. On retirement from Time, he became president of the Washington Baltimore Regional Association and Economic Development Group, and then for 2.5 years was the senior vice president of a major Washington public relations firm. Now, isn't that impressive? Mr. Zorthian.
Thank you very much. That was much longer than it deserved, but if I may ask your indulgence for one more moment to answer a question that might be on the minds of some of you as a result of my personal complexion and appearance. I'm of Armenian background, born in Kutahya in Turkey, have been in the Soviet Union a number of times, including extensive visit to Soviet Armenia. Nevertheless, I've lived in this country for well over 60 years, so I'm not quite sure I reflect my inheritance and ethnic background fully. I'd like to speak today very informally, initially giving you some background, some facts, some perspective, I hope, on the media in the U.S., and then open it up to questions and answers, which I know you will have, and which may elicit some more focused responses that will be of particular interest to you. The media in the United States, let's first define what I'm talking about when I say media. I include in that the printed press, the printed media, newspapers, magazines. Magazines cover an enormous range of variety and focus and subject matter. Television, radio, complementary to television today, cable television, which incorporates both over-the-air broadcasting as well as original programming. And then in the very broadest sense, other channels of communication, such as books, maybe even films. But the core of all this probably are the news magazines, the printed new media, the newspapers, and the audiovisual media, radio and television. Just to give you some picture of the numbers as a background, there are currently in the United States approximately 10,800 radio stations. For those of you who have any knowledge of radio, that includes both AM and FM. There are, in addition, translators, things that relay a signal. I'm not counting those. I'm counting about 10,800 origination points. There are about 1,600, to be exact, 1,593, last figures I have, television stations of various kinds, commercial, both VHF and UHF, educational, both UHF and VHF. Again, those have translators that enable the signal to get into low transmission, bad transmission areas. Cable television, which as you recognize, carries video signals, both from over-the-air broadcasters as well as origination, via cable, coaxial cable, fiber optics, and so on, today is reaching about 50 million subscribers. Now, those 50 million include a lot of the television viewers of over-the-air broadcasts as well. And that's a growing field, a medium. Television sets, incidentally, receivers, the last figures I have are for 1984, and there I have 85 million sets. I suspect it's probably 90 million sets today. Now, television's in 98% of the homes. Radio is at least that high, if not 99%. Newspapers, some 1,700 dailies, 6,800 weeklies, roughly 500 semi-weeklies, total of over 9,000. Again, the latest available figures that may have gone up or down somewhat since then, but basically you're correct, 9,000, with a circulation of 63 million. Now, that's not as many as television, I know for you. The United States is a big country, as is obviously the Soviet Union. Physically, these are spread all over the country. The key point here is that in any one place, for any individual in the U.S., there is access to a large number of the media. Radio, TV, newsprint, magazines, and so on. And that's a very important part of the principle of the operation of the media in the United States. Pluralism, quantity, numbers. Now, the basis for the operation of the media in the U.S., the basic concept, is that the media, and this goes back to the origins of the country and the initial philosophical, ideological, political concepts that led to the creation of the country, is that there is a great deal of weight, emphasis, importance in an independent media, not subject to government regulation or control. And this grew out of the history of the colonies, it grew out of the experience they had with Great Britain as the colonial power, it grew out of the philosophy of the French Revolution. A lot of factors went into that. But a great deal of emphasis was put into an independent voice, an independent media. They probably didn't call it media then. They had pamphlets and print. They just obviously did not have radio and television. That principle is founded on two or three basic concepts. One, that is, it is important to have independent evaluation and judgment of the government, of society overall, in behalf of a public. Two, that the electorate, the people, will cast better judgments, will make better judgments on their affairs, if they are well educated, if they are better informed. And the theory that an independent medium, an independent channel of communication, provides better, more accurate, more reliable information than a controlled medium. And three, that in behalf of the public, there is a need, if you will, for a watchdog, for a monitor, for an independent evaluation of the actions of the government. In turn, those roles are based on the concept that the government of the United States is subject to periodic review and, if need be, recalled by the electorate, by the people. That periodically the people, and it depends on the level of government as to how often this happens, in the case of the presidency every 4 years, the people have cast a judgment on the performance of the government. To cast that judgment, they have to be better informed. They will do a better job if they're better informed. To be better informed, you need an independent channel of communication, judgment, evaluation to wit the media. Now, all this is incorporated in the very basic law in this country, the Constitution, that is perhaps unique, if not unique, certainly one of a very limited number in the world, a Constitution that incorporates this in the so-called First Amendment. And I know, suspect you've heard about the First Amendment often and in many forms and in many ways. But insofar as the media is concerned, there are only four words in the Constitution applying to it. Those four words are in Article 1 of the Bill of Rights, which says the government shall make no law abridging freedom of speech or of the press. Or of the press. And the word press has been interpreted by and large to cover all the activities that I now call media, audiovisual, print, whatever form of communication there is. But that is the basic principle on which the media in the U.S. functions. That requirement in the law, the government shall make no law abridging freedom of speech or of the press. And most of our discussion will go back, ultimately, to that provision. Now, the media under this kind of a legal umbrella, and with the growth of this country, has grown to the proportions I've described and the numbers I've given you. And there is a great deal of importance in those numbers, because while there is no requirement for the media under this law to be responsible or accurate or to take any particular approach, the belief in this country is that the very fact of pluralism in the numbers that are involved, by the interaction of those numbers, will lead to ultimately to accuracy, truth, a more enlightened public, a more effective public. So pluralism is important. If there were only limited numbers of the media, then many of these concepts I've described would probably not be valid, at least not be effective. But there is strength, if I may use the cliche, in numbers, in terms of the media. And any image you may have that the media in the United States is monolithic, all comes from the same perspective, all is consistent, or all follow the same line, is simply inaccurate. There is enormous variety in the media, whatever political labels you want to put on it, from far-right conservative to far-right liberal. There is enormous variety in the content, in their focus, in their approach to the task, and certainly in the technical means of communication. So the first thing I would ask you to dispense with is a conception that there is a cohesive monolithic medium in this country, which is all cut out of the same pattern. Now, I say the law requires, the Constitution says, there will be no law abridging freedom of the press. That is a valid statement. Nevertheless, also be aware that there are limitations on this particular provision in the Constitution. Limitations in various forms. The first and most obvious limitation is when it runs, this provision runs head-on into other provisions of the Constitution. For instance, the Constitution gives the government the right to defend the country, the responsibility of providing for the common defense. Now, the provision that common defense has been interpreted by the courts to authorize the government to protect information that would jeopardize defense, that would jeopardize the common security. And therefore, there is a limitation on the media in what can be printed of classified military information, information that jeopardizes security. Now, we get into some fairly refined legal judgments here, but let me say quickly, there has never been a decision, as these things get tested in the Supreme Court, there has never been a decision that has inhibited the press from printing information before publication, from that actually printing. The famous case of the Pentagon Papers, which some of you may have heard about, in which the government went to the courts to try to stop the New York Times and the Washington Post from printing volumes of classified information, what had been classified by the government, ended in a Supreme Court decision that authorized publication by the two newspapers in the face of government claims that publication would jeopardize U.S. security, U.S. interests. The court said to the government, you have not made your case. If publication of these documents jeopardizes U.S. security, come in after publication and prove that the government has been damaged and the newspapers will be subject to prosecution, will be subject to criminal charges. That has never been done. Pre-publication censorship has not been exercised in the U.S. Now, in theory, if a newspaper were about to publish the technical workings of a highly classified military weapon, I guess the government could go and stop it, or if it were published, prosecute. But such cases after publication prosecution are extremely rare. There was a case where there was an attempt was made to stop publication of the workings of an atomic weapon, and the magazine involved demonstrated that this was fairly public knowledge for specialists, and no stop was made. Nevertheless, the press on its own has voluntarily, in three wars that I've been involved in one way or another, refrained from publishing battlefield information, tactical military information, which publication of which would jeopardize military lives, the lives of men in uniform. That kind of self-censorship has been acceptable, and I think, if needed, would probably be enforced under the Constitution. Another right under the Constitution that comes in conflict with freedom of the press, and that's my rights as a private individual. The press is subject to charges of libel, or in the case of voice media, slander. If I am libeled, if my reputation is destroyed by inaccurate information in the press, by charges and distortions which can't be proven, I have a claim, and I can file and probably obtain damages from the media. My right of privacy, guaranteed under the Constitution, is protected, and when it conflicts with freedom of the press, there is a give and take, but that's a limitation the media has. There are other limitations, if you will, a little less direct, but nevertheless very real ones. Some are economic. Just plain taxing the media puts a restriction on the press. They have to pay their taxes like other commercial businesses. The media has to use the post office very often, the mail circulation. Charges are put on the post office. If those charges are too high, then the media is restrained in a sense. There is regulation, particularly in the case of the broadcast media. The Federal Communications Commission, in order to avoid chaos over the airwaves, assigns licenses to television stations, to radio stations. Those licenses carry with them certain responsibilities, certain requirements. They have to give access, because there are only a limited number of stations, to differing viewpoints. They have to undertake the broadcast of a certain amount of public service broadcasting, broadcasts that deal with issues of interest to their communities and so on. But that is a limitation. It says the press cannot do, and the media cannot do everything it wants. There are certain things it has to. Now, these restrictions are real. They are there. But they are not onerous in most situations. Occasionally, they become contentious. But nevertheless, overall, They have not restricted the press in its most important role, which is informing the public and acting as an independent evaluator and judge of the performance, not only of the government, of the government certainly, but of all elements of our society. There is only one major restriction on the press, and that is public opinion. Public opinion in the sense of the refusal of the electorate to read, or to watch, or to listen. That's the ultimate restriction on the media in this country. And there's going to be a very good case made that the irresponsible elements of the media, the inaccurate ones, the ones who don't do their job well, ultimately are denied or rejected by the public. And that today in the United States, we have a much better media body of media, more responsible, more accurate, more effective than it was a generation ago, two generations ago. And the reason for that is increased sophistication on the part of the public, increased awareness, and with it a rejection, as I say, of the bad in the press. Now that's not a quick operation, that takes time. That takes time, and it works slowly, but nevertheless, it does work. Now that is the basic, what shall I say, foundation for the media in the United States. I know that you will have questions on how it is performing. I think you should recognize that in the United States itself, there is concern about the media, how well it fills these roles I have talked about, and constant, continuing analysis and criticism of the media. Let me mention some of those. The problems that exist. Certainly, there would be very few people in this country who would think the media is perfect, or even, you know, in a great deal of the time, effective. Problems that do exist, and that are the subject of constant discussion. One, an increasing concentration in the media. Ownership by too few owners. Now, if you took 20 of the largest media companies, most of them are in broadcasting, they're in magazines, they're in books, they're in newsprint, newspapers. And there is a tendency for more and more merging and buying. So there are concerns that there are too many large concentrations of media dominating the field. When I talk about the national press, I talk about three networks, ABC, CBS, NBC. I talk about two wire services, the Associated Press and the United Press. Three news magazines, U.S. News, Time, Newsweek. And three, perhaps four, what I would call national newspapers, New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, Los Angeles Times. Well, that's not an awful lot of numbers for 220 million people, 250 million, and particularly with this weight we put on the issue of pluralism. But I would note that among those, there is no set pattern. There are different approaches, particularly in the media, print media. The Los Angeles Times and Washington Post are quite different approaches. The news magazines are different, so on. However, I would concede readily that one of the problems is this concentration issue. Another one is the pervasiveness of the press, the very size of it, the overwhelming presence of the press. Ms. Walsh mentioned that I was in Vietnam as press spokesman. At one time in Vietnam, we had 600 Western correspondents crowded in a little city. I remember a Vietnamese minister telling me, Barry, this country just isn't made for 600 Western correspondents. And they were just overwhelmed. You get any major event, take these hearings we're going through right now or any other, the numbers of media there are just enormous. Or a major conference, the Soviet-American conference in Geneva, the periodic meetings of the industrial nations, there'll be 300, 5,000 press reports.